Welcome to today's episode. So today I've got Chris Kennedy with me. Chris is the director of the Tennis Academy here at Tucker Tennis Academy, powered by Genesis Health Clubs. This podcast intention is to bring some knowledge, but also the previous episodes, we've gotten to know the other pros at the Academy. So if you'd go listen to some of the previous, we've done some really good ones with Joao and Tomas and Chris and Tiffany. Go check those out. Today's subject is ITF. In America, the general tournament circuit that players play is the USTA, which is awesome. There's also some UTR events. But Chris, with you being in New Zealand over the last how long?
8 years.
The last 8 years, you've seen a whole world of ITF that really a lot of Americans don't see. So can you just talk about what is the ITF? Who is it for? Who plays it? That type of thing.
Yeah, so it was interesting when I moved to New Zealand, I didn't know anything about the ITF. So ITF is International Tennis Federation. So that's the governing body for international tennis. And then you've got the WTA and ATP, which those are the professional association, you know, for
like challengers and pro tournaments.
Yeah, I mean, because there's the ITF pro circuit as well. So right. Anyway, I'll circle back to all that. So when I got to New Zealand, I had no experience with the ITF, and in my mind, ITF was only for the highest level of players, because that's what the ITF governs. Junior Wimbledon, Junior Aussie Open, Junior US Open, like you have to have a ITF ranking. That's how you qualify for those events. So the assumption was that's, you know, you've got to be really good to even be talking about the ITF. But when I got to New Zealand, I realized that when kids turn 13 or 14, you know, they'll play nationals and stuff in New Zealand, but immediately their attention goes to playing ITF events all over the world. Australia, Asia, Korea, China, I mean, doesn't matter, everywhere. And so it was really interesting to see, because it completely changed my perspective of what the ITF was, and who it was for is the other main thing. And so coming back, it's something that I'm not thinking every kid should just play a full ITF schedule or anything like that, but I actually think it's something that we can expose to them sooner, because especially if you're aspirational, the way you get into the Grand Slams is through your ITF ranking. So I think the sooner we can get kind of kids and parents seeing that world, the better, really.
And so is 13 years old kind of the when you can start playing ITF juniors?
So ITF junior is 13 to 18. So it's an open tournament for 13 to 18. So if you're 13, you could play an 18-year-old. Like there is no age
There's
divisions.
No 12 to 14. It's just all 18 and under.
Yep, and it's based on your birth year.
Okay.
So when you turn, you have to turn 13. So if you turn 13 in March 2022, then that month forward, from your birthday forward, you could start playing ITFs. But once it clicks over to the year that you turn 19, you can't play ITF anymore.
Yeah,
so if you're
sense.
Born December 31st, you lose like a whole year basically.
And if you're born in January, you've got a really good birthday.
You got a great birthday. Yeah, yeah. So that's how they do it in the ITF. Yeah.
Yeah. Everett was actually signing up yesterday and he said to me, "Dad, I got a really good birthday for ITF." I didn't know why, but you just answered the question why.
Yeah.
So I know there's ITF for juniors, there's also ITF for men and women. So does ITF kind of run the futures tournaments in America, if anybody's heard of a future?
Yeah. So ITF Pro Circuit futures, I want to say challengers as well. I should know that.
I think challengers, I was looking at it yesterday.
It depends on the level. I think ITF Pro Circuit goes up to 50K.
Okay.
Definitely 25K. But they also do the, you know, like, so yeah, so they have juniors, seniors, pro circuit, but they have 60 and over, 70 and over. They have
really?
Wheelchair. They have it's the international governing body for basically everything that's not a country's, you know, USTA or Tennis New Zealand. Like they have their own. It's everything outside of country ran tournaments and ATP WTA.
So if let's say we've got a player at the academy, or that's not at the academy, just a parent listening, and their child's 15,
yeah,
and they're a 9 UTR or a 7, it really doesn't matter, and they want to go play, what's the first step? Like, where do they even get started?
So you just go to the ITF website and you have to sign up for what's called an IPIN, which is free. It's just, it's a way to verify who you are and get you into this, into the ITF system. And then you get a login, and then through that login, you can sign up for all the different ITF events. ITF events, how you get in is very simple. It's based on your world ranking.
So the WTN number?
No, based on the ITF rank.
Okay. So what happens if...
Now, whether there's going to be changes to that, I don't know. As they've been using WTN more. But as far as I know, now everything is based on the ranking. And the ranking is based on your sixth highest...
just like USTA.
Just like USTA.
So what happens, though, and this is where I think WTN may come in, and I'm not sure, but let's say it's a 48-player draw in the main draw, and then a 24-player draw in qualifying, but 100 kids sign up, and only 40 even have a ranking.
Yep.
How do they determine the last 8 in main draw and 24 in qualifying?
So WTN, I think, is what they're using now. In the past, they used to use things like national rank, and I don't actually know exactly how they did that, but I think they use WTN now.
Yeah, that. And that's what we were seeing yesterday was WTN was kind of the thing that's unifying all this.
But like ranking first. So if you have say there's 24 qualifying draw and there's 100 kids signed up, whoever has points and a ranking, they'll get in first. So if you're ranked 1800, like, you'll get in first even if your WTN is lower than somebody.
Correct.
But then once no one has a ranking and they've got 12 spots to fill, then I think, yeah, they're going by WTN now.
So USTA is kind of a deal where no one signs up until the last minute. Like, you'll see a tournament will have, like, very few people, and then 2 days before the cutoff, there'll be a bunch, and then the day before, a bunch, and then, like, an hour before the cutoff, a whole bunch more.
Yeah.
ITF seems to be the opposite of that.
Yeah, yeah.
It kind of explain, and it's a world change for parents that are operating in the USTA world. Explain what the sign up looks like even in ITF.
Yeah, so the system's actually quite cool. Like when you get in there and start looking at tournaments, it's fairly easy to use. But the way it works is you can sign up for as many tournaments as you want, and you don't get charged until the withdrawal deadline passes. I'm sorry, until the entry deadline passes. I take that back. The withdrawal deadline.
I think you're right.
So there's an entry deadline.
About 7 days after the entry deadline, right?
So you'll put them in. The withdrawal deadline will come up, and then a day before the withdrawal deadline, or even hours before the withdrawal deadline, you know, sometimes it, depending on the tournament, but you can see 100 people pull out. Like, it's pretty crazy because, again, no one's charged for it. So people just kind of go in. It's almost like how they make their calendar. They just go in and put themselves in. And because, yeah, there's all these different factors that go into it. And so depending on, you know, the girl here that from New Zealand that's been training, like, she's played a lot of ITS, Aishi. And so depending on how she's doing in some events, it's like she might sign up for a J200, which we need to go through what that means.
Yeah, but, tournament level.
But then she does well enough in the previous tournament that actually that same week she could play a J300 instead. So you kind of leave yourself opportunities and options to play different events.
Yeah, that's what I'm noticing is people sign up because there's no, you don't pay, you don't anything, you just sign up.
Yeah.
But then, like you said, if the deadline is the 19th of March and the withdrawal deadline is the 26th of March, that's kind of where the charge happens. But also, as when you sign up for your IPIN, they make you go through this like 4-part course of learning. And part of that course said that there were suspension points if you don't withdraw.
Mm.
Right? Can you explain a little of
if you withdraw late.
Yeah, like
yeah, so I think you get like one grace like if you withdraw late, but after that you start getting suspension points to your ranking for withdrawing late.
Right.
And they're strict about that. And if you miss a deadline, you're not getting in.
So you got to stay on it.
Imagine what the thing that's cool about it is they are ran exactly the same as ITF Pro events. So the same thing is like you sign up. If you're in main draw, you have to sign in on Sunday night, just like a pro event.
So you have to show up and physically sign in.
Yeah, you have to show up, physically sign in. They do the draw in front of everyone. It gets made.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And the draw is not made till Sunday night.
And they're literally making it while everybody's sitting around signed in.
Yep. And then everything gets posted that night, and then you're assigned a court. So like the schedule is like it's one match a day, and you'll see like your schedule come out and say there's five courts. You'll see your third on court four, not before 11:30.
So it's just like a pro tournament.
Yeah, just like a pro tournament. Just like a pro tournament.
And so what? You know, there's a lot of parents out there, and I think this happens when you're in the 10s and 12s, is, hey, I want to get most bang for my buck at a tournament.
Yeah.
So I want four singles, four doubles. You know, I want my child to play as much as they can play. Why would somebody sign up for something that's single elimination, one match a day? Yeah. How does that even – I mean, in America, I could see people out there going, why would I even do that?
Yeah, and I think that's where I would really like – to look at the big picture, to go, being able to play USTA events where you're guaranteed four matches is awesome. Like, that's really good. But then also playing events where if you lose, you're out, it creates a different stress and pressure as well. And so it's good to have both. And I think in the USTA, because there's so many good players here, I think playing more USTA than ITF makes sense as well.
100%.
New Zealand, it didn't. The kids playing, you know, 20 ITF events a year is what made the most sense. And so I think that the reason why you would look at it is, one, if your child does have any kind of pro aspirations, it's a walk in that life a little bit to see what it's like. You know, is another example, like Aishi just went to Asia and she lost second round qualifying and third round qualifying, and she didn't play past Sunday for 2 weeks. She did a whole trip, and you know, she had to just stay there and train for a week. So it sounds pretty brutal, but it also teaches kids, like, this is what the life looks like. And, you know, pretty quick you find out who's about that life or not. Like,
well, and you talk about wanting to play pro, but I think also if they want to play college, because most of the foreign players that are at a decent level in college, they're foreign, right?
Yeah.
And so I don't even think it hurts to understand going to different countries and talking to different people.
And that's a whole nother aspect to it. It's like, you know, expanding the horizons of the players. Like even if they're not going to go pro, but you just think, like you and I were talking about earlier, like you can actually fly to Mexico City or Bogota for cheaper than you can fly to Nevada or Florida.
Right.
Like, and so...
And that's not always true, but you look at the dates and sometimes it is true.
Yeah. And also when you stay there, it's cheaper too. But anyway, that's a whole nother topic. But the main thing is the experience your child gets to have, where they get to see other countries, other cultures, play other players on different surfaces. You know, even if the on-court result doesn't really, you know, line up or, you know, whatever, it's still like such a enriching experience for your child. And it's not as I don't think it's as costly as people think, and B, you also don't have to be as good as you think. Like, you know, that's the other
those
aspect.
Are two misconceptions that I had a week ago that I'm realizing are total misconceptions.
So
talk to me a little bit. When you go on the website, you immediately see tournament levels, and in USTA seven, in the national sevens is kind of the lowest level, and then ones are the highest level. Here I see J500 all the way down to J30. What's better and what not better?
No.
What do the levels mean?
Yeah. So the J30, I don't know what J stands for. It doesn't really matter. But 30 means if you win the tournament, you get 30 points. So J30, J60, J100, J200, J300.
So the more points is going to attract better players.
Correct. Yeah. And so, and it's just based on the, whoever signs up, right? So J30 is the lowest. J1000 is the highest.
It's showing 500, but
so
it may
J1000 is a Grand Slam.
Oh, got it. So it's like Junior Wimbledon, Junior
So there's
junior
only four
USA.
Of those. Got it. The four Grand Slams. J500 are kind of the think of it like a Masters event. They're kind of like the step below. And then J300s would be like what would be like 500 events or whatever on the tour. So not to make it confusing, but that's how it goes. 30, 60, 100, 200, 300, 500 Grand Slams are 1,000.
Got it. And so
and to play in a Grand Slam, to Aussie Open, to make it main draw, you probably need to be about 150 or lower usually. To make qualies, like 300-400 can get you in usually for qual. Not as many people play that, but U.S., Wimbledon, and French, you've got to be top 100 to even make qualies.
Really?
Yeah, just being where they're at. There's not as many people willing to travel to Australia typically. So it's of all the Grand Slams to get into, it's the quote unquote easiest. But
yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's just and if you look at even the J30s or J60s, the ones that are in London are harder to get in than the ones that are in. I'm looking at Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah,
right.
It's gonna be different.
It's different.
And that's the other thing too, is like you know, New Zealand hosts 6 or 8 a year. And some of those smaller countries, it's actually quite a benefit for the players because not as many people travel to New Zealand, and it's a chance to kind of build your points up a bit in less competitive environments. Oh, yeah. Like, you know, you go play a J30 in Florida, that's a lot different than playing one in Auckland.
Play a USTA level 5 in Florida, a lot different than playing one in Nebraska.
So it's just one of those things. The thing I like about it is it's just very clean. Like, it's in terms of just, you know, points and
yeah, it's an attract. So it's one of those things, if you don't know much about it, you don't know much about it, but getting into it, I've realized this is not what I thought it was.
Yeah.
And I think that, like you said, getting out there, seeing more countries is attractive, and looking at the cost of traveling, it's not always more expensive to go out of the country. Sometimes it's actually cheaper.
Yeah.
Especially these big cities that have so many flights to them constantly. Sometimes it's just cheaper.
Yeah, where the dollar goes a long way. The U.S. dollar can go a long way in some of these other countries. Like Dominican Republic, they have tournaments every week. And everything from J30s to J300s. And look, you probably don't want to go too far off the resort that it's held on. But you know, it's actually a fairly, you know, I say fairly cheap, but you can stay down there 2 or 3 weeks and get a lot in.
Got it. And so that was the last thing I want to talk about is if a player goes, there'll be a lot of parents out there that'll say, all right, my child goes and they lose in qualifier. And before and after talking about that, I even want to talk about how do you get in qualies and how do you get in main draw, but they lose in qualifier on Sunday. The tournament's going on all week.
Yeah.
And one of the things I've noticed is the players that do lose don't do like USTA. And the moment they lose, jump in the car and go home. They might stay 4 or 5 days and just train.
Yeah.
Because now you're in an environment where there's a whole bunch of really good players in one spot.
Yeah.
And so is that kind of what you would encourage parents with their child to do?
Yeah. So usually with these events, you try to say you're flying to Dominican Republic. And normally you'll see like Mexico City. There's normally back to back. There's not typically one event.
It's actually got three in a row.
It's usually it'll be, you know, a 30, a 60, and 100 sometimes, or it'll be a 60-60 or 30-30-30 or like, but they've set it up knowing that players are going to be flying in and they want at least two events to justify the flight. It's kind of the way it goes. So most of the time, if it's the same level of event, 80-90% of the kids it's all going to be the same players for the second event as well. If it's going like 30-60-100, it'll change a bit because some kids will come in just for the 60 and 100. Some kids will have to leave after the 60 because they can't get into the 100. You see a mix anyway. And so typically what happens is the kids losing early on, they stay and keep training to get prepared for the following week.
And everybody else is in the same boat. So they're all motivated to find somebody to hit with.
And you'll see if done right, like, you know, we found that like 3 week tours are kind of a good sweet spot for players. You know, first week, they're kind of getting their wits about them. Second week, they're into it. Third week, they're into it. And then it's kind of ready to go back and train and get back to your home a bit. But as they get older, you'll have kids. You know, I've had kids go for 5, 6, 7 weeks tours.
All right. So one last question. And we'll, so you think about parents that are looking at it online and just giving the exact same example we're in right now, 48 main draw, 24 qualifying draw, so 72 players get in, but there's like 110 signed up.
Yeah.
And when I talk to people that play ITFs, they're like, you probably will get in.
Yeah.
How does that even make sense?
Yeah, because everyone will pull out.
That's so explain that. Like, if you're a player that has never played an ITF, there's 72 that get in, there's 110 signed up. What do you mean? So people will pull out and you'll end up getting into it because there's multiple events all over the world
Why? Yeah, well, so once the if the withdrawal deadline hasn't passed yet and there's 72 spots and you're number 110, again, it depends on the level of the tournament. If it's a good tournament, you're going to have less people pull out.
Right.
I don't know why people do it, but people just sign up for like tons of stuff and then they just all pull out. So I don't actually know what the... I mean, I know through the players I've coached, like...
Well, I can tell you from the website, it kind of adds it to your calendar, so it's easier to see once you add it.
That, that would be the reason, is like you just see the events you can play, and maybe you decide 3 weeks ago you're not going to play it, but you just don't worry about it until, oh, the deadline's coming up, I'm going to go ahead and pull out. It's different, but yeah, like that's how it
goes. So would your advice be just sign up, make it to the withdrawal deadline if you actually intend to go? Like, you don't want to sign up and get to the withdrawal deadline without pulling out if you have no intention of going.
Yeah.
But if you do, if you do get in, you'll go. Just sign up, make it to the withdrawal deadline, and see if you get in.
Yeah, if you don't get in, then you don't get charged anyway. And
so when you would go to these, would you just wait to plan any flights, hotels, anything until you knew you were in?
Yeah, I mean, if you're on the cusp like that, like, obviously...
If you know you're in, then you just plan.
Yeah, and the thing is that there's a every year they post the cutoffs of all the tournaments from the previous year. So you can look...
You kind of get an idea.
You get an idea. So you can look and see, all right, I want to play J30 Mexico City. What was the qualifying cutoff, which will be unranked?
Unranked, yeah.
And so then you go, okay, well, now it's going to be based on WTN. And then as the... Once the entry deadline closes... you'll be able to figure out pretty quick where you're at, like, on that, and then you might have to wait until then. So the good thing is like, if you can just get some points, you can get into, you'll get into every J30 and most J60s.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier that points are a little bit different. Even winning a first round of main draw in a J30 doesn't get you points, right?
Yeah, and so it depends. Like, if it's a 48 draw, I think you have to win two rounds
to even get any points.
To get any points, yeah. If it's a 32 draw, you have to win. You have to get. If you win your first round, you have to get to the quarterfinals to get any points.
Which I like. I mean, if it's now, are J60s a little different?
J60s first round, you'll get points.
So the entry level deal.
There's a whole table, like a breakdown, so you
that
know.
Shows you.
Yeah, it shows you all the points and how you get them.
Got it.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much.
And sorry. In doubles, you get 25%, just like USTA.
Okay, yeah. So you do, and is doubles harder to get in or easier? Does it matter? Do most of the players play doubles?
Most of the players play doubles. It's easier in the sense that if you can get a partner, like, you can get into some events maybe you couldn't otherwise. But doubles is really important for ITF because, like, we've had some Kiwi players that they've got really good singles rankings, and you can look. It's largely because they're good doubles players.
They're doubles,
and they're getting some massive point totals from doubles.
Okay,
and so it which then because of that, maybe really they're like 300 in the world in singles, but they're like their top 100 because they're doubles, and so they're getting to play grand slams because doubles rank is so good.
Got it. Well, yeah. Thanks for being here. If anybody else has questions, you just want them to reach out to you.
Yeah, happy to talk about it.
All right, thanks again, and hope everybody enjoyed the episode. See you in the next one.